This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello everyone, just before you start listening, they do use some acronyms in this podcast and I thought it'd be useful to let you know what they are before you start. ESG is Environmental Social Governance, SRI is Socially Responsible Investing, QQQ is an exchange traded fund that tracks the NASDAQ 100, and SDG is Social Development Goals. Enjoy.
Good day everyone, I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America, here today to talk about ESG investing, something that's not only gained prominence among both institutional and individual investors, but a manner of investing that's starting to outperform some other categories in a rather surprising fashion. Joining us now to talk about that is Sarah Bratton Hughes. She is head of sustainability for Schroders North America. And Sarah, thanks for being with us. We've noticed, obviously, that ESG has been in the headlines quite a bit. First of all, define, if you would, what it is.
Thanks, Ron, and thank you for having me today. In its simplest form, I define ESG investing as a better way to invest. It's not the ESG or SRI investing that a lot of people think of from the 90s. It's not an exclusionary approach to investing. It's very much an inclusionary approach. When you're looking at these long-term structural trends and how they can impact the long-term sustainability of a company's business model or durability of cash flows.
All right, now let me ask you about risk-adjusted returns. And we've seen, obviously, since the March 23rd lows in the U.S., technology and biotech has done quite well. And if somebody simply bought the QQQs for the NASDAQ 100, they're up almost 30% in 5 months. Is ESG competitive with that, or do you have to really put on a different hat to understand that process?
If you look at the QQQ, it is definitely not as simple as just buying the biotech and the tech names. I look at the QQQ and I go, are these really long-term sustainable business models? Many of the companies within the QQQ are non-earners. And to me, if I'm an investor and we're talking about risk-adjusted returns, these are binary factors. Are they going to get FDA approval or not? That's not at all long-term sustainable investing. That's actually binary, to me, risky investing. So we have seen ESG and sustainable investing outperform. We saw it going into the crisis, and we've seen it through the crisis. And there has been a lot of studies out there that, no, it's not just tech and biotech that are leading to the outperformance. If you look at it on a sector neutral basis, sustainability has outperformed throughout the crisis. So it's not just simply these funds being overweight tech or biotech. I actually think of ESG as somewhat of a proxy for quality.
Yeah, let me get you to drill down on that a little bit, because as you said earlier, in the 90s, ESG or sustainable investing or socially conscious investing was a process of exclusion, whether it was alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, things like that. This is a process of inclusion. So, well, what are the criteria for determining whether or not you've got a business with a sustainable long-term model?
So when I think about ESG or sustainable investing, I do bucket it into two separate categories. I think of one as an integrated approach, so that very much that inclusionary approach. Are you systematically assessing these long-term trends throughout your investment processes? Are you committed to active ownership and engagement? And very much often, that doesn't mean that a fund manager won't buy a quote-unquote bad or negative ESG company. What it means is that they understand that risk, and it often manifests itself within position size and or holding period. When you move over into the sustainable fund bucket, broadly, these are best-in-class approaches looking for long-term sustainable leaders, compounding growth stories over time that for us looking across a stakeholder model and how these companies are treating all their stakeholders is key to their long-term success in the future.
And yeah, with respect to that governance component, I mean, that has been growing in importance over time, given going back to the early 2000s, corporate scandals and the like. What element of that is most important at this juncture?
I think what we're seeing at this juncture is it's very hard to separate the E, the S, and the G, and that they're often intertwined. Because what we've seen since COVID, it's very much been focused on the S and how you're treating your employees and how managements are treating their employees and that stakeholder base. To me, that's very intertwined to the policy and the procedures they have at the governance level. As always, it's to access to management, rights of minority shareholders, and capital allocation priorities from a governance perspective. But I think what we're beginning to see is many of these issues, whether they're the E, the S, or the G, become intertwined. You take something like cyber risk. That's a key risk to a company. I would consider that a sustainability risk. We're often looking for board oversight on cyber risk as well. So these issues that used to be broken up by the E, S, and G are now becoming much grayer, and many of them overlapping, both from a, whether it be a social and governance issue or an environmental and governance issue.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Hey, let me ask you a little bit about the environmental, and I hate to break it up further when you're saying that they're all kind of in many ways synergistic, but we're in an environment now, particularly in the United States, where environmental regulations are being rolled back, which could help a company's bottom line if they decide to allow their focus on the environment to lapse. Is it harder now to determine who's abiding by good environmental practices, given that they're in some instances no longer required to?
I would say no. And the reason why I would say no to that is although we are seeing this massive policy divergence between the US and the rest of the world, the reality is that we are in a global economy. And the EU has embarked on an ambitious sustainable finance plan. And make no mistake, the EU has a clear ambition to be the global leader in sustainable investing. So that would make ESG not only ESG integration a hygiene factor over there. So that would be baseline status quo. You have to have ESG integrated into all your investment processes. But if you look into the rule, they're actually, it's moving beyond just that with an ambition to move capital into greener issues. So why do I think that this is going to impact all companies globally? Well, any asset manager that has a license to operate and distribute within the EU with over 500 employees has to abide by these regulations. And within the regulations, we're going to be requiring additional disclosure from corporates in order for whether it's Schroders, whether it's JP Morgan, whether it's BlackRock, to be able to distribute their funds in the EU. So it is going to continue to push that corporate disclosure part of it. So from a headline perspective in the US, could it be at risk? Yes. But what we're seeing happening, not just in the EU, but in the rest of the world in terms of regulations and with regulations around sustainable investing, just in the past 3 years, more than doubling globally, with most of them creating a tailwind for the industry. I do believe that going forward, we're going to continue to see increased corporate disclosure around environmental issues, regardless of the policy environment here in the US.
Hey, let me ask you a little bit more about disclosure and transparency. I mean, that's obviously over the history of this style of investing been a little more difficult to ascertain whether or not a company is indeed a good corporate citizen, if you will. Are you now, and in fact, are institutional investors demanding more of companies that they not only disclose what's required, but also assess the environmental cost, the true cost of producing goods and services?
Yes, 100%. I would say not something that's been a headwind for sustainable investing is you say you're investing sustainably, but you can't really show me. So we've seen this history of greenwashing, and now I like to call it rainbow washing, where people are aligning to the SDGs. So we've seen this history, and to me, it's been a little bit of a headwind for the space. But not only now are asset managers demanding it of the companies that they're investing in, but our clients are demanding it of us, of the asset management community. So it's no longer okay just to put out a glossy firm brochure talking about your sustainable investment initiatives. You now have to be able to evidence it and evidence it on the fund level.
With respect to, you know, both active and passive managers, there are some large passive institutions that claim they can capture ESG in their funds. Is it easier or is it maybe more effective, I should say, for an active manager to engage in sustainable investing than it might be for someone who's running a passive basket that only mirrors the activity of a particular benchmark?
I definitely think it is the best approach to sustainable investing is through active management. We've seen a proliferation of third-party ratings, and the ratings agencies are great and they serve a purpose, but ratings are inherently backward looking. And many of the passive approaches are run on these third party ratings. To take a true approach to sustainable investing is to get that true forward looking perspective. And I think that's something, as well as the active ownership and engagement. And I do believe that that is something that you can only achieve via active ownership, where you don't have to own the market or own all of the companies that a rating agency may have AAA rating. I think from an active management perspective, you're really able to find those diamonds in the rough, as well as create alpha to work with the companies that may have historically been laggards, to help them understand what are the most important policies, procedures, and disclosures that they have in place. There's a real opportunity from an alpha perspective as well.
So, Sarah, we obviously in the U.S. have a presidential election upcoming, and the decidedly different points of view between Republicans and Democrats on these very issues of ESG. If indeed we were to see a shift in the White House, do you expect there to be an accompanying shift in the area that you follow most closely?
Well, definitely. I akin it to being, are we tardy to the party or just fashionably late? What we will see, or we anticipate seeing, is the U.S. Jumping right back into the Paris Agreement. But not only that, both Biden and Harris have had a history of being focused on climate and climate justice as well. And I don't think that there's any coincidence in the fact that Harris had proposed a new Climate Equity Act just 5 days before being announced as the VP candidate.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much for your insights this week. Sarah Bratton Hughes is head of sustainability at Schroders North America. And that does it for this edition of the U.S. Lens. We'll be back soon to talk to you again on another highly important topic when it comes to investing your hard-earned dollars. I'm Ron Insana. Have a good week, everyone.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review, and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.